Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. And Stone, got a full house today.
Good morning, sir. We most certainly do. We've got paparazzi. We have two great guests. A little bit later in the program, we're going to get a chance to visit with the vice chairman of Senior Care Pharmacy Coalition, Mr. Fred Burke. But first up on Atlanta Business Radio this morning, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce the regional vice president for Georgia, Alabama, and Tennessee with a little company known as Sprint. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast, Brian Miller. How are you, man?
Hey, good morning, Lee. Good morning, Stone.
Brian, you want to share a little bit about what Sprint's up to in Atlanta?
Sure. Over the course of the last year, we've gone through a process called localization. And I think anybody who's ever worked for a large corporation has sort of seen that the center of gravity is headquarters, and a lot of decisions, a lot of resources sort of get pulled back to the headquarters, and it sort of disconnects you a little bit with the local market. And so we've been going through a process. We're trying to push decision-making. We're trying to push resources out to the field so we can connect with what's unique about each of the markets that we serve.
So now your region is Georgia, Alabama, Tennessee.
That's right. We call it TAG.
TAG, there you go.
Tennessee, Alabama, Georgia.
Well, you know, we're Georgia-centric here.
That's right.
So how do you attack a region like that?
Well, I think there's really unique things about
each state, right?
That's
and
right.
Even down to the city and the counties and communities within that.
That's right. And I think a great example would be when we first built the team about a year ago and we started evaluating the community. Atlanta, for instance, has a very high Hispanic population. Mm-hmm. About 16% of our customers are Hispanic, yet we do, at the time, we're doing almost nothing to service that community. Mm-hmm. So right away, we started figuring out demographically where were Spanish-speaking people living, how do we get bilingual reps in the store, how do we change the signage and the contracts, and how do we communicate with that community so that we can serve them better.
Now, how does Sprint Corporate kind of, do they give you kind of a lot of autonomy to say, okay, your market has some little quirks and unique elements of it, go do whatever you got to do?
Yeah, we have a full sort of almost like a small business, like the CEO of our little business here. We have marketing. We have all the pieces that you would normally think about a business that are pushed out into the field. So we make the decisions here local. We certainly have responsibility back to headquarters, but we're trying to make decisions here that are unique to what Atlanta needs.
So what's a specific effort or set of actions that you do, for instance, to immerse yourself in the Hispanic community and start building those relationships?
Yeah. Well, the first thing we did was actually hire somebody who owned it on my team, right? Prior to that, we had nobody who even was bilingual, who was able to connect with the community and mm-hmm. figure out what we've done. I also have the benefit of having hired my local marketing person who is bilingual. And so we've spent a lot of time working with the specific media outlets, going into the neighborhoods and really trying to build an experience in the store. I often talk about, if you've ever been to Cancun and you go down and try to shop and you say, hola, and they start talking back and you're like, all I've got is hola.
All I got. I'm out.
Yeah. I'm out, right. And if you flip that experience on its head and somebody's in our store trying to buy a wireless device, which can be a complicated exchange, mm-hmm. you really have to be able to connect with those folks as well. So that's an example of what we're doing.
And then, so you mentioned the Hispanic. Are there other markets that you're targeting?
Sure. We also have a unique, if you think about the whole country, a very high subprime piece of in the South here with lower household income. And how do you communicate? How do you provide special offers and special ways for people to purchase that might not be the same as somebody purchasing in San Francisco or New York City?
Right. What about the business community? Is that one of your markets as well?
Yeah, I actually have a business team as well. We have both an enterprise team and a small business team. And so we do outreach to the small business community as well.
Now, devices and services that you sell, they're getting more and more ubiquitous for all of us, and we're doing more with them. My youngest, Kelly, is coming back home for a couple of months. But I noticed, I mean, everything she does, she watches TV on the darn thing.
Right. Well, I think there's really a unique thing that's happened in wireless today, and that is the devices have gotten technologically advanced, so you can actually watch something on a device, whether it's a tablet or a handset. The networks have gotten fast enough so mm-hmm. that you can actually stream content on them. And then unlimited price plans have all come together so that you can sit and watch TV. In fact, we're doing a trial right now in this market with Sling TV, which is an over-the-top application, so that you can sign up for Sprint, pay $17, and then you can watch live streaming TV on your device, your tablet, your phone, whatever.
So that's kind of for the cord cutters who are getting rid of their cable. This gives them another way to access the content.
That's right. From folks in our generation, it's a little more difficult. I think we're a little set in our ways. But to your point, millennials or my children, they don't do anything but watch content on a wireless type of device.
Well, that's the whole reason it came up. Last night, we unloaded the car, and I said, well, what about the TV? She said, I don't have a TV. She hasn't had a TV in like a year.
Exactly.
I thought everybody had a TV.
Yeah, no, and it is really interesting to see it take off. Because, you know, you can for $17, you get 30 plus TV channels. And you think about that for a moment, and it's live streaming on any device that you have, whether it's over Wi-Fi or a wireless device you're carrying with you. The power of that, but you wonder why our kids lack a little bit of focus. I mean, think about what they're bringing with them every day.
That's right. So now, how do you educate the market about something like Sling TV?
Yeah, so we've been doing it in-store. We've been doing a little bit of print and a little bit of media. I think you can also pick it up on radio. But we really are testing it here in this market to see, you know, as a wireless carrier, we're constantly trying to say, what value can we provide to the consumer? And now, with content becoming such a big deal and what I talked about with the unlimited plans and these ubiquitous devices, what can we provide to the marketplace as part of the transaction, right? The other thing we're doing right now, I don't know, you guys may not know about Tidal, but anybody who's sort of under 30 years old knows about Tidal. It's a high fidelity music streaming.
Right. That's
he's faking it. He doesn't know the first thing.
Jay-Z has
it. Right.
Jay-Z started it. It's by artists for artists, and Sprint's a part owner in that. And so we're right now in the process of figuring out how we deliver that content.
And that's exclusive content.
That's right.
Right.
A great example would be like Beyonce's Lemonade only is on Tidal. Mm-hmm. And so there's
how about that?
Yeah, there's some types of there's social media that's exclusive. They'll launch an album on Tidal, and then 30 days later they may release it to the regular market. Mm-hmm. So how do we then deliver that content to our consumers as well?
And it sounds like a lot of your stuff is driven through the retail outlets.
Yes.
So how do you serve them to help them kind of penetrate their communities that they serve?
We have a lot of ways of doing that. We call it street fighting, where we get outside of our stores. We do. We actually have a system where all the customers, we use Facebook for targeted ads. We also have our customers who have signed up that we can text them or email them and provide them value and things that are happening in the store. All those things sort of happen on a day in, day out basis.
Because those are the boots on the ground in the neighborhoods that they serve, right?
That's right. That's exactly right. And it's, again, just like each market is different, each neighborhood is actually different from each market. So you have to really have a unique sort of stylized approach to how you address each store area.
And then when you're recruiting the people that run and manage the stores, how important is it for them to be those kind of people, relationship-driven people? It can't be a transaction, right? Because you don't want to be a commodity item.
Right. Two things. You have to be from the community. That if you hire somebody from outside the community, you're sort of hobbling yourself to the start.
Right.
And then you have to have somebody who really is a passionate and outgoing personality. Because if you've ever walked into a retail store, I don't care what type of retail outlet, I think you notice right away whether there's energy in the store or not. And that actually flows directly from the store manager, not from all the folks who are on the floor.
So that sounds like a point of differentiation for you guys.
Yeah. And again, as you can't make those kind of local decisions if you're making it out of Kansas City, right? That becomes very difficult.
I got to know this guy's backstory. I mean, have you always been involved in something this dynamic, this fluid, this focused on? I mean, there's a lot of change going on.
Yeah, no, I actually am a recovering lawyer from the old days.
Really?
So yeah, it was a very strange career path, but
wow.
Yeah, I practiced law for 7 years before I went straight. So,
but it seems like it would be a very fun, energetic place to work for millennials for sure. But, you know, for old guys like me, I think I would find it a very invigorating environment.
Yeah, no, it is an awesome experience. You go into a retail store at the busy hour and people are flowing in and people are flowing out. And it's almost like triage that people, so many different things happening, have so many different needs. And how do you keep people happy and service them and make sure that you're connecting with them? It really is an energizing experience.
So now from your job of kind of overseeing all the different states and the markets and stuff, how do you keep track of all that?
Yeah, so that is, you know, complicated because if you think about Sprint, anything Sprint in those three states is part of our team. So national retail, which is you think about Best Buy, you think of Target, you think of Sam's Club and Walmart, all the Sprint devices that are sold there. You think about our Sprint corporate stores. We have partners who also run Sprint stores. We have business. We also have Boost stores, which is the Sprint prepaid brand. If you look around and see any Boost stores, those are ours. So I've got a team that heads each one of those channels, and we sort of approach it from that standpoint.
And then, but they're each having that same issue where you want to get down into the neighborhood level and serve them with people that are from the neighborhood. And so it kind of has to spread that way, right?
That's exactly right. If I try to hold all the power and make all the decisions at my level, you sort of have a mini centralization going on here.
So you got to kind of have it kind of go down into the level of each of the stores almost.
Yeah, you really have to hire people and then empower them to be able to run their individual channel and their individual market. And in order to do that, you really have to release the reins a little bit.
Now, is that one of the initiatives that you're trying to do is just get more people out there working for Sprint?
Yeah, we actually, over the course of the last, in 2016, we had 150 or so jobs that we added in the market. We increased our distribution via stores about 12%. We're looking to do a similar transaction this year that we're going to add, another 10 or 12% to our distribution. We'll probably hire another 100 or 150 folks as well. So a growing business during all this, which is exciting.
Now, is it a challenge for you in this Atlanta market because there is a, you know, kind of incumbent here that has a lot of presence?
Well, it's hard in one way, but in another way, it's also a blessing because somebody else has you're constantly the challenger, right? You're constantly saying, how can I do this differently? How can I be more nimble and quick because I'm out here in the market? And you know, some of our competitors are really large companies, and so we can be a little quicker and a little smarter
about how we... So you're more nimble.
Yeah, exactly.
So it sounds like to me this would be the way you guys approach the business. It would present a marvelous foundation to directly and deeply serve the community at large and these individual communities, yeah?
Yeah, well, you're touching on the last piece that's really for us part of the culture of what we've done on my team locally, but Sprint as a whole, and that is we all now work, live, and play here. So how do we get connected with this community? And we every month try to do a community event where we donate our time, sometimes our treasure, and we go out to a local school and we'll renovate the school. Recently, we went to Heritage and did a coat drive for kids who don't have coats for the winter here locally. Mm-hmm. And so every month we're trying to do that. And again, it's part of how do you really connect with the community. But then we also have the larger Sprint Foundation, which is a philanthropic effort where we're giving away 1 million wireless devices and the airtime. And it seems like maybe an odd thing, but if you think about it, there's 5 million kids without access to wireless or Wi-Fi. And you might think, well, look, I mean, it's a luxury Wi-Fi, but actually it's not. 7 out of 10 teachers give homework that require you to leverage the internet.
Right.
And so by definition, you're behind if you're not able to access the internet. So we're trying to plug that gap by providing the device and the airtime for 2 years while they're in high school to be able to go home and do their homework and work on school endeavors.
Is that the million project?
It's called the 1 million, right? Mm-hmm. And we're working with local schools here who just signed up, as well as some in the Nashville market who just signed up as well.
Now, for you, what's the most rewarding part of the job?
I have to tell you, when we started the community organization piece and getting out into the community, to go and sort of participate in some of the schools and communities where it's easy to get disassociated as a corporate citizen, right? And mm-hmm. kind of what are your numbers? What are we driving? How much, you know, are we selling? But to go into the community and to see the kids' faces when we gave those coats at Christmas time, and I was thinking about how my son would react if I gave him a coat for Christmas and how these kids reacted.
He said, probably not the same.
It was amazing. It really was an amazing experience. And I all day I thought about that, and I've thought about it a lot since then. So that's something unique that we can really do as a corporate citizen and give back and really try to connect with the community.
And is that, you think that's part of the Sprint culture?
Absolutely. Our new CEO, Marcelo Claré, has brought that as part of, if you look at what we're doing, that the whole 1 million in this idea of giving away those devices really emanates from him and the culture he's created.
So I don't know when or how you would find the time, but I'm curious, a leader like you, Is there a source that you go to for inspiration? Are there some books that you've read over the last 6 months or blogs that you follow that, you know, maybe some of our listeners could tap into?
Yeah, I have done some of the reading and some of those things. I find that to be educational, but it's a little solitary, right? I mean, you get some good ideas and it's hard to sometimes put those in place. What I found over the course of time is two pieces. One, I have a mentor that I work with outside of the business that I've known for years, who has a very different approach to life than I have, which I think is important. And then I try to mentor people within our business because you get as much back from that as you give. And to me, that interaction is where you really grow as a leader and as a person. If you can accept what somebody else is telling you and that there's more than one path to achieve something, I think that you can add that to your repertoire and become a better leader. So that's where I've found most of my inspiration is reaching out to other people in that way.
Now, we're a business talk network, and can you share for the person that has a small business or maybe even a small enterprise business, like why they should consider Sprint?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing right now, and I could talk for 20 minutes about products and services, which I won't, thankfully for your listeners, but I think it's really this concept of unlimited, that I think as a tool, wireless in the business, right, has become almost, you can't do without it. But how do you know what that cost is? How can you make sure that you're leveraging that platform and you're doing it in a cost-effective way? The only way I think to do that is to do it on an unlimited basis. So my bill is the same every month. I know what it's costing me now. I'm saving money on my wireless services. How do I leverage that to become more productive? We also even have a package whereby the phone can be leased. So you kind of turn that model on its head. So it's an as-a-service model instead of paying CapEx, it's all OpEx. So there's ways that we can really help the small business not have to pour a bunch of money out to get a wireless platform that they can leverage.
And then, so if a small business or a medium-sized business person wanted to learn more, they should go to one of those stores, right? That's the first point.
Small business can go into any Sprint store. We have small business experts in all those stores. We can directly connect with them and help them. They can also reach out to me at Sprint Tag on Twitter. But if they hit a retail store, we'll get them pointed in the right direction.
I am so glad that you were able to join us this morning in the studio. This is like a double espresso. you have a lot of energy. You guys are doing some great things. Thank you so much for joining us, man.
It's been great to be here, Stone and Lee. Really, really appreciate the opportunity to talk with you.
Well, delighted to do it. And I think we ought to have you back sometime because I get the sense if we have you back in 2 or 3 months, you're going to be doing all kind of cool stuff that we hadn't even thought of yet.
As a recovering lawyer, I have more to tell you than you ever want to hear.
Hey, listen, can you hang out with us while we visit with our next guest?
I'd love to. I look forward to it.
All right, Lee, you ready for the headliner?
All right.
Okay, please join me in welcoming Vice Chairman, Senior Care Pharmacy Coalition, Mr. Fred Burt. Good morning, sir.
Good morning to you.
So what'd you learn in that last segment?
Oh, it was fantastic. I'm here to talk about the SCPC, obviously, but interestingly, my main job is Guardian Pharmacy Services. We operate 30 long-term care pharmacies in 15 states, and our business model takes yours to its next most logical extension. We believe so strongly in the concept of localization and entrepreneurship that we actually own, on average, 85% of each of our pharmacies, with the remaining 15% in the hands of the local management team. So each pharmacy is its own business with its own P&L, balance sheet, bank account, board, et cetera. And we think of it as an entrepreneurial incubator. We in Atlanta and our support team provide business support services to these fantastic clinicians out in the field who truly know how to serve the homes, the residents, and the caregivers. But as you're going to hear when we talk about the SCPC, our business has become so complex, so esoterically difficult that these local caregivers and clinicians need a lot of help on the business side. So here in Atlanta, we've got 50 MBAs and CPAs and LLDs that have to navigate the business side of things to help those people out in the field. But because they own, on average, 15%, they're local owners. And
they're very incented.
very incented. They, our business is 24/7. It involves taking care of frail elderly people in residential care settings, and things happen all the time in the middle of the night, and that local owner is incented to go the extra mile to serve those patients.
But it's a good thing, like, healthcare is pretty stable and doesn't change much.
No, Ron.
We'd love to make it simpler for you with a wireless platform, Fred.
I was just listening to you. Maybe our IT people need to talk to
you. Exactly. There you go. Now, can you share a little bit about SCPC? What are you guys doing for folks?
Sure. We are the Senior Care Pharmacy Coalition. It's a nonprofit advocacy organization based in Washington, D.C., and we are dedicated to representing the legislative and regulatory interest of independent long-term care pharmacies and the frail, elderly, vulnerable patients that we serve. One of our goals is to ensure that federal lawmakers, regulatory agencies, and the broader healthcare community understand what we do and how we impact the lives of these providers and patients.
Can you share the, maybe explain the difference between a, I guess, a retail pharmacy and then a long-term care pharmacy?
It's vastly different. And sometimes I wonder if we shouldn't call ourselves pharmacy, because anyone conjures up in their mind a corner drugstore or grocery store pharmacy where lots of stuff besides prescription meds are being sold.
Right. Like, they're like convenience stores.
Exactly. Barbecue grills.
Right. You never know what you're going to find.
Well, our pharmacies are not even open to the public. We're licensed as a closed-door institutional pharmacy, and it's located in an industrial-type setting whereby no patients actually come into the pharmacy. And one of the main differences that we do are twofold. Firstly, compliance packaging, whereby we take all these prescriptions, and a resident of a long-term care facility has a lot. On average, 12, in fact, believe it or not.
Yeah.
And if you think about that, one script may be take once a day at night. The next, take three times a day at meal, et cetera. Well, we organize those prescriptions by med pass. So the nurse goes through the nursing home with a cart. Here's Mrs. Jones in room 101. Her picture comes up on the screen. It says, okay, for this med pass, these are the 8 pills that she needs to take. Here's what they look like. They're packaged right there for this med pass. Barcodes create the medical administration record. So that's one element of service. Then another that's vastly...
Regarding that, who is kind of watching the patient's back when they have so many different medications, like to know this one might have some weird reaction with, you know, number 7?
Perfect question.
That's right, because the patient has no idea, right?
Exactly.
And a lot of times the doctor, I know I had, my mother died like 10 years ago, but she went through this. So one time she had like 20-something medicines, and some of the medicines were for side effects of other of the medicines, and it just becomes, you know, this kind of thing where they're just piling on, it seems. They never subtract. It seems like they always add.
That's a big problem. In fact, it's one of the second major differences between a long-term care pharmacy and a retail pharmacy.
Right. I'm sure the retail, they can't
keep
They don't understand the context that any given prescription's in, right?
We're one of the few places in all of healthcare where we're able and mandated to manage the entire drug regimen for our patients. So another big service we render is our consulting pharmacist team that visits every home once a month, reviews the entire drug and treatment regimen for every resident, and works with the medical director to actually reduce the number of meds for the very reason that you just said.
So you're like kind of the quarterback.
Exactly. Exactly.
Because at least someone's watching the patient's back that knows what everybody's doing. Because even the doctors, don't they? They might only know their one job.
That's right. I mean, in a retail pharmacy environment, one can go to their cardiologist, get prescribed a statin, take it to Kroger,
right,
and get it filled, and then visit their IM and have a completely different medicine filled, and maybe those two can have an interaction.
Right.
But in our situation, we have the entire drug regimen right there. A consulting pharmacist, as I said, is visiting and reviewing those charts every month. So a retail pharmacy, really, their job mostly ends when the script is delivered to the ambulatory patient, whereas we're part of the continuing care team working with the nurses, the doctors over time to serve these, as I said, very frail, elderly, sick people in these long-term care settings.
So when you set out to grow your business, you want to put one in Phoenix or whatever, are you courting, or is someone in that market, to your earlier point, having someone local, courting a long-term facility and saying, hey, we do this, we do it extremely well, we're look at how we're doing well over here. Are you then courting that institution to become one of, or their pharmacy of choice? How does the business model aspect of all this work?
That's how it works. A home wants to use one pharmacy.
Okay.
So that all of the packaging is the same, the consulting pharmacist is the same, the electronic medical administration records are posted up by using one pharmacy.
So it's one system. It probably, there's less chance of error, I would think, right? So then that way they don't have to memorize, oh, we're using Walgreens and CVS and these guys. So like,
but he's got to unseat whoever's doing it now or catch the facility before they launch or something, right?
That's correct. So service is the main differential between pharmacies, because our pills all look the same.
Right. Yeah. It has to be differentiated by service.
Exactly.
And it goes back to the earlier point about how important it is to kind of have the boots on the ground that people invested that are serving the community.
That's exactly
instead
right.
of some big corporation that, you know, they may never even see these people.
That's exactly right. So as we look for new markets to expand, we will either launch a greenfield startup with an entrepreneur who will write a check for their pro rata share of their ownership share, or we will acquire an existing pharmacy and we'll only acquire 80%, let's say, leaving 20% in the hands of the local entrepreneur. And as I mentioned earlier, the business has become so complex because of these pharmacy benefit managers, PBMs, which is why we founded the SCPC, that they need a lot of help in navigating through the complex business side of delivering these meds and serving these elderly patients.
Now, can you share a little bit about the role the pharmacy benefit managers play?
Yes. I'll try to be nice. We must work through a PBM to dispense any medication. And a PBM, pharmacy benefit manager, an example would be Express Scripts or Caremark or Optum Rx. Those three control 90% of the market.
So now, who are they working for?
They are the middleman between the insurance company and the provider. We're the provider.
Because we need more middlemen, right?
Exactly.
We've got to find more middlemen.
And these middlemen are, they are determining the reimbursement rates for us. Mm-hmm. And that's really our big beef. We don't even know what we're going to get paid for a prescription until we adjudicate the claim. And they say that it's based on market pricing, but recent Medicare studies show that not to be the case, as a drug on any given day may be reimbursed at widely different rates by the different PBMs, and even from day to day.
What about like PBM. State to state? Does that vary as well?
Yes, it does. It varies by market, by day, by provider. And it's very hard to run a business when you have not a clue.
And lack of transparency. Who would have thought?
About two-thirds of every generic prescription that we dispense, we're underwater on. We lose money on. So, you know, that's a very interesting dynamic to have a business where you make a little bit of margin on a third of the prescriptions, but you lose margin on two-thirds and on average, you know, it's kind of like putting your head in the freezer and your feet in the oven. On average, you're 98.6.
Right.
That's kind of how we have to deal with our business on a day-to-day basis. So that's why we formed the SCPC, to start explaining to the world this weird business dynamic that we have going on with these.
Because you have to educate the consumer, really, right? Because we don't have a clue. And we're told different people are the bad guys.
That is a very good point, particularly in the assisted living environment. The patients there all have different plans, and they're all Medicare Part D.
Right.
That's the drug benefit. And involved in that are co-pays and what we term the donut hole. So a patient, the first few months when the new year starts, will be paying only a copay
right.
for each of their prescriptions. Then at a certain moment in time, they move into the donut hole where they have to pay everything
out
of pocket. And then after a few months
then
of that,
they've spent enough.
Exactly.
And then now that it's covered again.
So a major part of our business is educating the residents in an assisted living and their responsible parties,
mm-hmm.
And helping them navigate through this arcane world. Another example would be a PBM will have on its formulary drug A, but the doctor prescribes drug B in that therapeutic class for a patient. The doctor doesn't have a clue what drug the PBM has a special
and
deal
with.
And
the price of any of these, right?
None of the price at all. So here comes the prescription to us at the pharmacy. We log it in, adjudicate it, and we say, oh my goodness, Mrs. Jones is going to have to pay $400 for this. And we know that over here in the same therapeutic class, the drug that's covered by the plan is only $100.
Right.
I'm making up the numbers. But so what do? We go back to the physician who has moved on, you know, and suggest that he change the prescription, which oftentimes he will. And then we adjudicate it and help Mrs. Jones navigate the arcane world of the PBM pricing.
But that's another benefit of your service, whereas the retail pharmacist may not kind of understand all that.
Usually the retail pharmacist will just send back the patient who's ambulatory to their doctor. But we can't do that, firstly, because we're required by Medicare regulations to dispense.
Right.
And prospectively, we handle all of that for him or her.
Right. Right.
Mm-hmm. All right. So SCPC, am I saying that right? So
yep.
You got education, you got advocacy, you got that. That word scares the hell out of me, adjudication.
I got a lawyer here, so relax. He'll take care of it. So,
$150 an hour, I got to cover.
Is there also like getting together and talking through issues, you know, Margarita Mondays? Or, I mean, is it a community,
not as much. I think we are bound by antitrust regulations to focus solely on industry type issues that affect.
So it's
everyone.
A little more buttoned up than that.
Unfortunately, that's
right.
The way things go. We're not able to truly operate that way at the trade group, but
mm-hmm.
that's what we do at Guardian Pharmacy. So all of our partner pharmacies spend a lot of time kibitzing with each other,
right,
learning.
Sharing best practices,
exactly,
right?
Exactly.
So your day job, that's what you're doing. But when you're talking about the SCPC, that's more of the advocacy.
Exactly.
What made you kind of get involved with that group?
Well, we saw what was happening over time as these PBMs figured out how to ratchet our reimbursement and became ever more obtuse, less transparent. And we finally realized that we needed to have a voice.
So was that a frustration?
It was out of frustration. And we founded this group 2.5 years ago. And I have to say that people tell us it's one of the most effective trade groups ever started in Washington.
Wow.
We've accomplished a lot. in a very short period of time. One of which, the main thing, is to start shining the light on the PBM practices, and when you shine light on what they do, things start crawling out of the corner.
The transparency, maybe it'll become more transparent. So now, what's a goal for you guys? What's something that you do that, you know, you're high-fiving at the end of the day?
At SCPC?
Yeah.
One is to help us navigate this arcane world of also the regulatory agency. So mm-hmm. we had a really big win this year when the FDA put forth some repackaging guidelines that were meant for reason A. It was actually geared for the compounding pharmacy world, but had an effect on...
An unintended consequence occurred?
Unintended
really?
Consequence.
Another thing that just boggles the mind that would happen.
And it was amazing. Essentially, what we did is went to talk to people. We talked to the FDA. We didn't get too far there, but CMS was helpful. They understand what we do in long-term care pharmacy. And members on Capitol Hill were extremely helpful. Mm-hmm. And I think we have navigated our way through that issue. And it would have had huge unintended consequences, as you said.
Now, the people that join SCPC are who?
Independent long-term care pharmacies. And we define that as a long-term care pharmacy that's not affiliated with a PBM. The largest player in our industry, a company called Omnicare, with about a 40 share of the market, was acquired by CVS, which also owns Caremark, which is one of the huge PBMs.
Right.
So they're now vertically integrated. So any pharmacy that's not affiliated with a PBM or vertically integrated is welcome to join our organization.
And where would they go to learn more?
That go to the website, which is seniorcarepharmacies.org.
And then if somebody wanted to learn more about Guardian, where can they go?
Guardianpharmacy.net.
Good stuff. Well, thank you so much for being part of the show today.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton, our producer Ryan Redhawk McPherson, and all the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you next time on Atlanta Business Radio.